First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Who will be next to lead JSO? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a big show today as candidates to be the next Jacksonville sheriff. Join us here in studio. Get on the line now. It's 549-2937 to join the show. Then later this hour, a conversation with Melanie Patz, the new president, CEO of this city's United Way. That and more ahead. But first this morning, early voting is underway this week across Duval County, across the state. And turnout in our midterm elections here in our area is expected to be higher than usual. Why? Well, that's because voters in Jacksonville are choosing their next sheriff. Five candidates, four Democrats, one Republican, are vying to fill the Duval County Sheriff's seat following Mike Williams' resignation earlier this summer over a residency issue. Now, here's what you need to know. All Duval County voters can vote in this August sheriff's race, regardless of party affiliation. Unless one candidate gets more than half of the vote in this August special election, there's going to be a runoff between the top two vote-getters in November. This morning, the candidates make their case here on the show. We're pleased to welcome to the studio Lakeisha Burton, Tony Cummings, and Ken Jefferson. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Miss.
Good to have you. Candidate T.K. Waters, the only Republican in the race, declined our invitation to appear today. Wayne Clark was scheduled to appear but is not here. We are already getting your calls. Join us. What are your questions for the candidates running to be the next Duval County Sheriff? The number to join the show, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page always open as we talk about public safety, gun safety, school safety, transparency and trust with local police. Give us a call, 549-2937. Now, before we go to your calls, we're going to give the three candidates in studio this morning some time to introduce themselves and talk about why they're running. We're going to speak to the candidates in alphabetical order. So we begin with Lakeisha Burton, a 24-year JSO veteran. She's been a lieutenant, assistant chief, zone commander, and the first woman to be executive director of the Police Athletic League and the first African-American woman to run for Jacksonville Sheriff. Lakeisha Burton, let's begin with you. Why are you running?
First of all, thank you for having me on the show. I'm excited to be here. So I've been saying from day one that it's time for change. So a vote for Lakeisha Burton is a vote for change in our city and for our agency. So for 24 years, I've been fighting hard, and I believe that it's time for us to have a leader who sees from a different lens and understand that we have to address our crime problem, our relationship problem from a different perspective. And I believe that we need a fighter in our next sheriff, and that's what I am. For 24 years, that's what I've done. I've fought to combat crime. I fought diligently for victims of crime, and I have fought for prevention of crime, and I am committed to continuing that fight if I'm blessed to be the next sheriff every single day. So as you stated, 18 of my 24 years, I was in a supervisory role. I knew early on in my profession that in order to affect change, that I needed to have a seat at the table, and that seat at the table meant that I needed to elevate in rank. So I did earn every rank, sergeant, lieutenant. I earned my master's degree in criminal justice. Again, I was the executive director over the Police Athletic League and was blessed to be an assistant chief. And so I know law enforcement, and not only do I know law enforcement, I know how to lead, and I have a proven record of being able to reduce crime and build relationships between community and law enforcement.
Lakeisha Burton, thanks. Let's go now to Tony Cummings. This is his third run for sheriff. He's an Army veteran who started at JSO in 1995 and has worked as a training officer and a detective in narcotics, burglary, and missing persons. And he's also taught at Kaiser University. Tony Cummings, welcome to the show. What motivated your run for sheriff?
Thank you for having me. Well, I came on the show back in 2015, mm-hmm. and I spoke to the citizens and explained to them that the city is hemorrhaging from violent crime. I returned in 2019, and the citizens heard my call. I received 56,780 votes when I ran for sheriff, but the city was still hemorrhaging from violent crime. It's 2022. It's time to go across the finish line so that we can actually do something about crime in our city. And what I would like to do is introduce the public to the equation. You are the missing link out there. A public accountability office inside the sheriff's office is what I would like to establish to make sure that the public has accountability and oversight over our policies as we push those $502 million in resources out there into the neighborhood to keep them safe. I want to make sure that we also establish civilian review boards so that you can hold the sheriff and his deputies accountable for whatever they do or don't do with the public's trust. I want to reduce wasteful spending of your tax dollars and make sure we have greater transparency inside the agency so that that you know what we're doing with your resources at all times. I want improved community engagement training, get your new management and leadership that's responsive to the people, and I want to make sure we reduce excessive force lawsuits. So you've spent $15 million over the last decade in excessive force lawsuits, and we got to get that down so we can put that money back into your pockets and put more resources on your streets. I want to make sure we adopt cop strategies that actually work, increase minority hiring of our officers so it can be reflective of the community that they serve, and I also want to make sure that we do something about this overcrowding in the jail by introducing an adult citation program for nonviolent misdemeanor offenders, and increase the youth citations for those children to give them a second chance. And finally, I'd like to make sure we expand the size of the Community Affairs Division to get all those nonprofits out there with great ideas on how to drive down violent crime in our city, get them involved with the process so we can make sure that Jacksonville is safe.
Thanks, Tony Cummings. Let's go now to Ken Jefferson, a three-time sheriff's candidate. He's worked in JSO for 24 years, including as a training officer, detective, recruiter, and public information officer. More recently, Ken Jefferson served as the crime and safety expert for our partners over at News 4 Jax, and has had other broadcast appearances that have made him a familiar face. Ken Jefferson, what motivated this run on your part for Jacksonville Sheriff?
Melissa, thank you so much for having us here today. We actually appreciate this opportunity. You've basically described some of my accomplishments. That's just a fragment of some of the things that I've been honored to be able to do within the Sheriff's Office as well as within the community. My why, as far as why I'm running in this race, as you said, this is my third time, and I really had to give it a lot of thought before I got back into this race again, simply because of the fact that in 2015, that was the last time I ran, and after assessing it and looking at it, it was a very close race. We lost by a very small margin, and we had to lament over that. And you know, when you put all of your time, effort, resources, and your treasure into something that you're passionate about, you come short, then, you know, it's a hurting thing, and you have to reflect on it and decide whether or not this is something that you really want to do or something that you want to get into. And me and my family, we did that hadn't reached a decision at one point. But everywhere I went, to restaurants, public buildings, churches, grocery stores, gas pumps, people would stop me on a regular basis almost every day since 2015 and said, "Ken, please run again. We need somebody like you that can bring change, that can bring this city together." I heard their cry, and I'm answering their call. And that's the main reason I'm back in this race. It's not about Ken Jefferson. It's about the people who are compelling me to get in this race because they feel that I can bring the city together. You know, as I travel around the city, it's a very large city of 850 square miles. I meet with people every day. And my goal is to meet somebody new every single day. And I've done that not ever since I got in this race, but I've done it on a regular basis prior to me even announcing to get in this race. And the things that I'm hearing, it concerns me that people are calling for a transformational leader. They're calling for change. They're calling for someone who is out of the box in their thinking and innovative in the way that they would police. And that's what I'm all about. That I'm hearing from the community that there are certain segments of our city that feels that the relationship between JSO and the public is fractured. They feel that they're being policed as opposed to being served and protected. The only time that police stop by their neighborhood is when they're enforcing the laws, whatever laws that they have to enforce at that particular time. So we've got to change that culture. We've got to change that mentality. It's all about relationships. A sheriff's office, not only should it look like the community that it serves, but it also should have a relationship with the community that it serves, simply because of the fact that the police does not solve crimes by themselves. They can't do it. It's impossible. You have to have buy-in and commitment from the community. And that's what I intend to do as your sheriff. I want to reconnect or reintroduce the police department back to the community. It took us a while to get to this point, Melissa, where we are with relationships, with all the things that's happening in the world and in our society that we see on a regular basis. But it's happening here in Jacksonville as well. I want to correct that ill. I want to correct that problem. And let's build this thing together.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with candidates running to be the next Jacksonville sheriff here in studio this morning. Listen live on the radio or watch them on our live video stream. It's up now on Facebook and YouTube. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Lakeisha Burton, let's go back to you. All three of you have talked about reform and change at JSO. Rebuilding trust with the public, bringing down the murder rate, really making serious changes at the police agency. Can you talk, I'm going to ask all three of you this, can you talk in a little bit more specific way about the kinds of changes you'd implement? Because I think it's fair to say there's some cynicism out there as to whether real reform of law enforcement is possible in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Lakeisha Burton.
So I've been sharing with the community that our agency is very different than it was just 5 years ago. So 70%, over 1,000 police officers have 7 years or less on the agency. So if we were ever going to affect and make any type of change, this is the time to do this. So I talk about three C's. I talk about culture, community, and crime. I believe that we have to focus on the culture of the police department and change the department from the inside out. So I just want to really focus on the mental health of police officers right now. When you look at this young generation of officers and the acute and chronic stresses that they have to deal with, we have to address that. And when I did that as a zone commander, there was a paradigm shift. So I believe that if you don't have healthy officers coming to work, how can they provide healthy service? So number one, we have to do is change a culture, but then we have to cultivate a culture of community policing. And as I stated at the debate, it's not a unit or a program, but it's a philosophy. It's the spirit of service. So I believe that we have to train and develop our officers and give them those tools to get out there and engage and build those relationships with our community. Because the truth of the matter is, for a long time, we have been trying to address crime by ourselves, and we can't do it alone. So think about if you have healthy officers that are well-trained, they're motivated to do their jobs, and now we have strong relationships with our community. You know what we do? We work together to combat crime, and that's why I was successful in having the highest reduction of crime last year.
Tony Cummings, let's go to you now. Now, you mentioned you'd like to bring a public accountability office to JSO, a civilian review board. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that. In 2016, the city's Office of General Counsel ruled that a civilian review board for JSO wouldn't be possible unless we change the city charter.
That is correct.
So that seems like a tough hill to climb. Could you talk a little bit more about that proposal and some other proposals you mentioned that you believe would bring down crime in the city and restore trust and accountability?
Excellent question, Melissa. First things first, bold new city of the South, I'm talking to you, Jacksonville. Fort Myers is doing it. St. Petersburg is doing it. Orlando is doing it. Tampa is doing it. Atlanta's doing it. They're all out in front of this. They're being bold enough to make changes in their charters to make sure the public has a seat at the table and direct those resources that they need to actually drive down violent crime. The trust between the JSO and the public has been broken for quite some time, and the police, unfortunately, has forfeited the ability to police themselves. And that's just unfortunate. But the truth of the matter is we can get back on track if the public has a seat at the table and help us move things in the right direction. And I'm talking to the city council members out there. I want you to think long and hard about the bodies that are stacking up over there at the ME's office on Jefferson Street. Those are people's loved ones. Those are family members. We have been hemorrhaging from violent crime since 2012 as the murder capital of the state of Florida. And I'm frankly tired of it. And I know the rest of the citizens are tired of it. So we're going to get ourselves out in front of this. Many of my colleagues in the race right now have proposed that we somehow create some sort of website to as transparency, or we turn the cases, homicide cases over to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate. Well, many of those are former JSO retirees, and they do a great job. But people are asking for transparency, true transparency. And the only way we're going to get that, Melissa, is if we invite them inside the sheriff's office, give them a seat at the table, their rightful seat at the table, so we can address this violent crime problem. And I'll leave you with this. There's one candidate that didn't show up on this set for a reason. He was put in charge of the number one crime problem in the city.
You're referring to?
Mr. Waters.
T.K. Waters.
T.K. Waters. He was put in charge of the number one crime problem in the city that's driving down the murder rate. He's been there for 10 years with that, in charge of that problem. And right, we currently solve about 29% of our cases. The national average is just over 50%. So 70% of our cases go unsolved, folks. That's 7 out of 10 murders go unsolved in this city, and he was in charge of that. So he's already demonstrated that he cannot solve the city's number one crime problem. So why would you ever elevate him as the sheriff?
Ken Jefferson, let's go to you. As Mr. Cummings mentioned, both you and Lakeisha Burton would refer police-involved shootings to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for review. Can you talk more about that and also your take on making this a safer city with more trust in local police?
Sure. So as I've been saying for the past 8.5 years, what Citizens Review Board is basically called is all about, and what they're calling for is transparency. That's what it equates to. It's just transparency. We just want to know what's going on, the who, what, when, where, and how of things happen within police actions and operations. And I've said from the get-go, 8.5 years ago, that my very first day in office, I will sign an MOU or Memorandum of Understanding or Agreement or whatever you want to call it with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to turn over all police-involved shootings as well as in-custody deaths to that particular state agency to investigate them, to show that JSO is taking their hands out of the investigation and giving it over to this state agency. This state agency is not just another law enforcement agency. This is the agency that actually governs police certification. You have to get your certificate from the Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission through the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So they are well aware of all of the policies, rules, procedures, as well as statutes in regards to police-involved shootings as well as in-custody deaths. Secondly, I'll impanel a civilian panel comprised of high school students, college students, lay people, our faith-based community, and our business community to meet with the sheriff every other month to assess our performance, to give us a grade as to how we're doing in the community. As your sheriff, I come with questions. When I'm out in the community, when I will be out in the community visiting people and businesses and churches or whatever, I have questions. How are we doing? How can we serve you better? Is there anything I need to know that can help me help you? Those are the questions that I come with. And every other month, this commission will meet and assess how we're performing. I want a grade. We want to know how we can better serve you, how we can improve our relationships within the community, how we can just make Jacksonville a totally better place. In addressing the violent crime situation that we have here in our city.
Let's go to your calls now for candidates running to be the next Jacksonville sheriff. In studio, Lakeisha Burton, Tony Cummings, and Ken Jefferson. And you, 549-2937. Bradley at the Beaches. Go ahead, Bradley.
Melissa, thank you so much for having this panel today. And the one question that's been on my mind for all the candidates is about body cameras and whether they view the body cameras as the citizens' information, which should be delivered to them as quickly as possible so that we do have that consistency and that transparency, or do they feel it's something that needs to be reviewed and approved by the union before it's released. And especially not just every shooting, but when the JSO kills somebody, does their family not deserve to review that information in a timely fashion? How can they continue to grieve if they don't even know what happens, even though we had a camera there the whole time? Thank you again.
Bradley, thanks. All three will respond to that, beginning with Lakeisha Burton.
Yes, I think that the body cams are a great tool. However, we do have to have a process in which the investigation is protected and the officers are protected. Again, I think a lot of the lack of transparency is stemming from the body cams and the lack of information that's being provided. So as Ken Jefferson stated, I think that the first step to, you know, rebuilding that trust and adding transparency to this process is to give it over to FDLE. It's a cost savings, but I think certainly we can do a better job with communicating with the parents, with the families, and having that open dialogue. But also, when I get in, I intend to look at the policies as it regards to the body cams and public records requests to ensure that we are providing the citizens with as much information as possible, but it will be in accordance to the law.
Tony Cummings.
Oh, that's an excellent question. As it stands, there's this thing called the Marcy's Law, and that kind of restricts law enforcement's ability to actually get that video footage out to the public in real time. I mean, Marcy's Law is a good thing. It protects the victim's information when it comes to criminal investigations. But our legislature just recently added law enforcement as a victim in when it comes to these type of incidences. So it's increasingly difficult to get that video footage out to the public, which I'm very much in support of. But we have to follow the law. But I can do the next best thing, and that public accountability office and a body of your peers would at least have some tracking information that they can provide to you in real time and keep you up to date with what's going on with the officers inside the sheriff's office, instead of you waiting for an internal process that's not transparent to share that information with you. And just to touch on this Florida Department of Law Enforcement issue, just turning our cases over for investigation to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement in and of itself is troubling about the integrity of our agency. So I have an issue with that, and integrity is big with me. I would like to make sure that the public is there to keep the sheriff and his administration on point and on track with what's going on inside that sheriff's office. Accountability and oversight is needed, folks. I need your vote, and we're going to make it happen here in Duval County.
Ken Jefferson.
So one of the positions that I held during my tenure with the JSO was that of the public information officer. And so in that position, I had to deal with public records requests on a regular basis, be it calling for arresting booking reports, mug shots, or internal investigations completions and things of that nature. The body cams are a part of public record because it's worn by the police officers to show their actions of what they did, how they did, and why they did certain things. I'm in favor, without compromising anything, of releasing it as soon as possible. You know, you can't compromise an investigation simply because you want to get it out quickly. I grieve, or I empathize rather, with families who want to have immediate closure, but we want to make sure that the investigation is not compromised. The release of those records are done properly and in order and in a timely fashion. I would advocate for releasing those. There was a time when JSO was holding on to these body cams for over a year, which was ridiculous. I went public with that and made a case that there's absolutely no need to hold the body cams that long. And then they begin to release them much quicker in an expeditious way. Families, I understand, want to get that information as quick as possible, but I think once you explain to them the process of how that is done and why it's done that way, I think they will understand. And in regards to FDLE investigating these things, there's 67 counties in the state of Florida, and over 50 counties utilize the services of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate their police-involved shootings as well as in custody deaths, and they do a great job.
Let's go to Cynthia in Riverside. Hi, Cynthia. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for your time. I want to know if you all are considering having a mental health unit come out to the mental health situations. And I also want to know if the white officers are going to be trained as far as just working out the door while black? So those are my two questions.
Okay. Police being called to mental health situations and figuring out how to change that has been a big rallying cry around people who want to see police reform. Let's just begin with that question. The other question she asked dealt with race, training white officers to understand particular challenges African Americans face. But let's talk mental health. Lakeisha Burton.
So I'm a huge proponent of mental health. Actually, 2 years ago, I had the privilege of leading the charge within the agency. We had a huge grant to look at mental health, our training, and how we were responding to those in the community for mental health. And I'm happy to say that as a result of that, we created a program called Co-Responder Program, where we have licensed mental health counselors actually riding with police officers. So we did that for a year, and now that has since expanded to 12 all over the city. And I can tell you, it is a new program to us, but not a new program to police departments across the country. So it definitely is a win-win to have a licensed mental health counselor now riding with the officer. And I can tell you, as a zone commander, it was very beneficial for when officers arrived to a call and would engage with somebody with a mental health illness. They were able to de-escalate the situation and contain the situation until the mental health counselor got there. And within 1 or 2 minutes, we were able to get people the services and into a safe place that they needed. So every police officer want that outcome every time. So I definitely think that it has added value to our police officers.
Tony Cummings.
Excellent question. I served as a crisis intervention training officer years ago with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. And what I loved about that program is that it taught the officers how to really engage the one of the most vulnerable populations in our city, our mentally ill. What I like to do, I like to expand the size of that program because it is definitely needed in our community. As part of that expansion, we're talking about community engagement training. So we generally conduct the training inside the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, but I like to take the officers to the mental health facilities and have the mental health specialists introduce them to the other side of the coin so they understand how best to go about that de-escalation that we're always talking about in law enforcement. That is definitely needed. And I would invite or encourage definitely the mental health specialists to ride along with our officers to these calls. I mean, we'll call a SWAT team out to a standoff. We'll call out all the other specialized units when we need them. Why not call out a mental health specialist when we need those folks? So that's part of that bringing that the public to the table, reaching out to all of those all of those stakeholders to make sure we all are in on the fight to address violent crime in our community. One person cannot do it alone. One sheriff can't do it alone, folks. We need the public to coalesce around this crime problem so we can bring it down in Jacksonville.
And Ken Jefferson.
So the short answer to that question is I am a proponent of working along with mental health professionals, even if it means that they're assisting the officers on calls and intervening when it's a safe circumstance. As a previous or former academy staff instructor, I'm big on training, and I would ensure under my leadership that officers are properly trained to know how to handle these types of calls in a way that if there's intervention that can be done, let's have that done and get that person treatment. Prevention, intervention, and treatment is what you strive for, but also the training has to be constantly refreshed so that when you're getting your new officers in and then your seasoned officers, they need to be abreast of the how this particular type of call is evolving. And what the public has to understand is that officers, when they're responding to these type of calls, they don't have a mindset of they're just dealing with someone mentally ill and they need to arrest them, because as you heard it before, the Duval County Jail is the largest mental health facility in our city. Mm-hmm. All of those people down there don't deserve to be in jail. They need intervention. They need treatment. And that's what we'll continue to strive for.
Lots of emails and tweets and calls. I'm going to ask one more question before we go to break. There are so many that we can't get them all in, but let's go to a tweet from Warren. Please ask the candidates how they plan to root out white supremacists on the police force. Lakeisha Burton.
Well, training. We have to continue to do training. I think that more than training, we have to have leaders who will be bold enough to have real conversations, hold officers accountable, and I think that is under the umbrella of racial issues. And I think that we have to start dealing with the racial issues. And I am someone who's always been bold to have discussions. I think it is important for us to be authentic. I believe that when we start having these really conversations, we begin to understand officers are informed and they understand how to serve our diverse community. So training is going to be key. Leadership is key, and holding officers accountable is key.
Tony Cummings.
That's an excellent question. I keep hammering this home, folks. In order to deal with these types of issues, and we do have them, it's systemic in many parts of our community. Unfortunately, I had an incident that happened at my house where something was thrown on my lawn, hate speech, and it's intolerable. We're going to do everything humanly possible to weed out these characters, starting with the recruiting process. Make sure we're recruiting fine men and women to join the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office that have your interest at heart from day one. We are there to protect and serve. Also increasing minority hiring, adding more women to the ranks, adding more minorities to the ranks, I think would go a long way in rooting out that problem of white supremacy, because, anytime you have people that promote hate speech or discrimination, they have to have a place to hide. And unfortunately, they chosen law enforcement in recent years to hide and terrorize the community with their hate speech. We want to make sure we don't tolerate that from day one. You have a sheriff who, along with the public, who will make sure that we address this issue and make sure the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office works for everyone in the community.
And Ken Jefferson.
So having served as a recruiter within the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, it was my job to go and find persons who were highly interested in coming to the premier law enforcement agency in Florida, which was the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. As such, part of recruiting persons and taking them through the process, there's a background check that's done. It goes back 10 years of your life. I'm going to push that move that goes farther than 10 years, because you can hide things in a background check. You know, you have your background check, you have a physical abilities test that you have to take, psychological test, polygraph, and then you have finally your oral review board where you sit amongst officers who are assessing all of those things that person has gone through. We have to do a better job of vetting that person if they make it to that particular stage, because many have slipped through the cracks. We've had officers arrested and it's doing time in federal prison that went through the entire process. Had they checked a little bit farther back in the background, it possibly could have prevented that type of person from being having the authority with the gun and the badge to arrest people, to take their freedoms away from them. So I will be an advocate for a more intense background check and more intense oral review board that they have to go through, so that we can try as best as we can to vet these people and to detect the problem early on, so that we won't have regrets later on.
I want to thank all three of you for coming by today in the midst of this busy campaign season to share your campaigns with our audience. Lakeisha Burton, Tony Cummings, Ken Jefferson, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Thank you for having us, Melissa. Thank you.
Now, as I mentioned, early voting is underway now for this race and others. The election day is August 23rd. Get out and vote, folks. And much more still ahead later, why the Riverkeeper is inviting you to have a few beers with them this week to support a healthier St. John's. But up next.
I wasn't looking to leave Baptist. It truly was. United Way gave me the opportunity to go back and do more in a different role.
A conversation with the new United Way CEO and what that means for this community after this. We'll be right back. Welcome back. She's a veteran nonprofit leader taking the helm of one of the city's most important institutions. For more, I spoke with Melanie Patz, the new president and CEO of United Way of Northeast Florida. Melanie Patz, a pleasure to speak with you, and congrats on your new appointment. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Melissa. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to catch up with you. This is a really exciting move, appointing you to lead the United Way of Northeast Florida as their new president and CEO. You've been a community and nonprofit leader for a long time and worked at the United Way before you were at Baptist Health, which we should disclose is an underwriter of this program. So what motivated you to go back to where you used to work?
I want to say I have loved the opportunity that I've had to really work to improve the health and well-being of the community through Baptist Health. I've grown a lot here. Baptist is an organization that cares deeply about the community, not just our patients, and it's been such a terrific opportunity. I wasn't looking to leave Baptist. It truly was. United Way gave me the opportunity to go back and do more in a different role with United Way. And I think United Way is such a critical organization for our community. It's an important convener and thought partner and community partner to address really tough and challenges that we have in our community and make a huge difference.
And let's talk about the role of the United Way and the difference you hope to make. When you worked at United Way before you were an executive and you worked on improving education, income, and health in this community, as president and CEO, how will you bring your experience to bear to really further that kind of community impact? What do you see as the biggest challenges that United Way is looking at for Northeast Florida?
Thank you, Melissa. So since I have been away from United Way, they have done some strategic planning. And a key component of research shows that for every 20 children born into poverty in Northeast Florida, only one of those will climb the economic ladder to become a high-earning adult. That's a problem. That's a problem not just for the individuals. It's a problem for our community as a whole. And the United Way's new strategy, which I am extremely supportive of and frankly was one of the reasons why I applied for the position, is to address that, to change our community so that we are a community of opportunity for all people, regardless of the color of someone's skin or the zip code where they live. And the specific strategies are addressing our basic needs, food, housing, mental health, improving our financial well-being, and that includes education attainment and workforce development and building assets, and of course, racial equity. So A lot of the work that I did in the past with United Way will inform the work that United Way is doing moving forward.
Yeah, let's talk about that. When you were at Baptist Health, you spearheaded two big initiatives, Jack's Care Connect, that's an online portal that helps connect uninsured people to care, and then another one that's getting a lot of buzz, Blue Zones Jacksonville. That's the local affiliate of a national program called Blue Zones, and it helps change people's health behaviors by transforming their neighborhoods. That's really interesting stuff. And how will you take the findings from those kinds of initiatives over to the United Way?
The Jack's Care Connect was an effort to bring together some really strong and committed healthcare clinics that serve people who do not have insurance and some of the clinics that serve people who have Medicaid insurance. There are not a lot of physicians who accept Medicaid in our community. And bring them together and create one point of entry and really create a system out of these clinics. And so from that, I gathered and learned the importance of collaboration with people who have a common goal working together. And that definitely we will take forward into the work with United Way. There are a lot of community partners who are focused in on those priorities that I just mentioned and really have a goal of a community of opportunity for every person. And so we want to work with all of those organizations, volunteers, donors, et cetera, to really bring that vision to fruition. And you asked about Blue Zones Jacksonville. So Blue Zones is an effort to craft environments so that we are pushed toward health as opposed to illness and injury. And it is bigger than what we typically think of as health. So it's not just about not having a disease or not having an injury. It is about being well. And a key component of wellness is our financial health. In fact, in the Blue Zones research, the assessment that was conducted last year, they used Gallup data, which included surveys of thousands of people who live in Jacksonville about their community and themselves. And one of the things that we learned through that research is Jacksonville ranks in the bottom 20% of all large communities in financial well-being. So that's a huge connection point between the work of United Way and what will be happening on the ground with Blue Zone. And I'm delighted to say that United Way is an investor partner in Blue Zones Jacksonville.
Wow. But that's a sobering statistic. And so I would say, I guess your work is cut out for you, despite all of the positive momentum that the city has experienced. We still struggle in Jacksonville with high poverty rates, problems with infant mortality, literacy, financial well-being. I mean, these are deep-seated problems in this city that aren't going to be solved overnight. How do you think about it when you think about these challenges?
So it's not only not solved overnight, it's also not solved with just one organization. I was talking with a community leader last week, and he said, you know, big rock, tall hill. And the only way that you get a big rock up a tall hill is you've got everybody in, and they're all pulling and pushing in the same direction. And so that's what we want to be a part of in United Way. We want to bring everyone together. We want to be a strong community partner. We want to be a great thought partner. We want to be a wonderful convener to engage everyone in the work that helps us create a community of well-being for everybody.
Well, congrats on the appointment. It's certainly a great fit for anyone that knows you. I want to thank you for your time. Melanie Patz, the new president and CEO of the United Way of Northeast Florida. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
A quick break, but when we come back, we'll tell you why the St. John's Riverkeeper is inviting you out for cocktails, knocking back a few to fight climate change. What's this all about? We'll explain right after this. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. Don't go away.
Northeast Florida artists are making noise that's reverberating across the country, and the Jacksonville Music Experience is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, and profiles of local artists, all put together by our team of local contributors. The Jacksonville Music Experience plays it local and plays it loud. Visit jacksmusic.org to read and hear more.
The January 6th committee has been uncovering what led up to the insurrection, but what's lurking beneath these hearings?
What we're really observing are the consequences of the fear of white status decline.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. How race is playing an unspoken role this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starting at 4 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Celeste Headlee. On her new album, rapper Megan Thee Stallion takes listeners through a wide range of emotions.
Whether it's the vulnerability, whether it's you feeling that like the baddest girl in the room, she's giving you all of that multifacets of herself because we inherently are also multifaceted people.
Next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Adam Schiff about serving on the House committee investigating January 6th and having led the first impeachment of Donald Trump. We'll also talk about his new memoir, which has just been published in paperback with a new afterword. It's called Midnight in Washington. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
In the United States, someone dies from suicide every 11 minutes. Can a new hotline help normalize mental health support?
You don't feel shame for calling 911. You shouldn't feel shame for calling 988.
The easy three-digit number launched last month, but some advocates are now urging people to think twice before calling. We'll hear why next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the St. John's Riverkeeper is launching a new series of brewery conversations exploring solutions to climate change, sea level rise, and the pollution that threatens the health of the river. Now, the first one is coming up this Thursday night at Aardwolf Brewery. Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann is not raising a glass here in studio, but she will be soon. Hey, Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, so you're inviting everyone to come on out to Aardwolf Thursday night. What's on the agenda besides the brews?
Well, definitely a cold brew is in order. But, you know, as we enter into peak hurricane season, we're reminded of the need not to only prepare for the next storm, but we also need to address climatic changes that continue to intensify the threats to our river as well as our community. Mm-hmm. And so this series is launching a series of conversations where we look for real solutions to climate change where we can take action, but having it in a relaxing air, surrounding of a brewery over a pint.
Sounds good. Now, you're going to be having as your guest Logan Cross mm-hmm. with Renew Jax and talking about a campaign to seek a commitment from the city and JEA to convert Duval and Northeast Florida to 100% renewable energy by the year 2050. Yes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jacksonville must take responsible steps now to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adapt to the impacts of sea level rise and a warming planet. And so now's the time for us as citizens to engage and encourage the city of Jacksonville as well as JEA to take these important steps to focus on renewable energy 100% by 2050.
Wow. Now that's a tough hill to climb. 12 other Florida cities have committed to power all of their municipal operations, businesses, and homes with renewable energy on or before the year 2050. Correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Jacksonville is the only large city in Florida that hasn't made this commitment. Is that accurate?
That is my understanding. And so we are actively encouraging JEA to, you know, take these first steps, you know, committing to 30% renewable energy sources by 2030, you know, focusing on not expanding coal use, looking at implementing more rooftop solar. And so there's steps that we need to be taking now, but you have to commit to that long range goal as well. So we have a roadmap for success.
You can learn more at the website renewjax.org. What are some of the objections you've heard so far as to why Jacksonville can't make this commitment?
You know what? The conversation is really just starting. So we haven't heard objections. Obviously, the rate conversation comes into play.
More in utility bills.
Right. And so that's why if you start working now as a community where we make a commitment to get there by 2050 by taking these measurable, responsible, reasonable steps now. But that's going to take citizen involvement. And so we want to engage the community to make sure we're expressing our desire to protect our community, protect our river from climate change, but acting now locally.
You are charged with protecting the river, the watershed. What are the biggest threats?
Sure. So what we're seeing is we have more flood events and more storms. You get more pollution washing into the St. John's River and its tributaries. As waters start to warm up, you start seeing more harmful algae outbreaks. In fact, there's a massive outbreak south of here I'm going to later today. Mm-hmm. And so these things are the threats that we've been fighting for years to protect it, restore the St. John's River. It's undermining some of those efforts. It's undermining our economy. It's undermining our quality of life. So we have to address pollution issues today, but make sure we're taking responsible steps to protecting our community and our river from climate change.
And inland flooding is a particularly big problem in Jacksonville, more so than other coastal cities, because we have this big river and all of its tributaries. I remember a recent analysis showing that Jacksonville has more coastline than any other city in the country, because we've got the ocean and then we've got the river coastline. So it's a big problem.
It's a big problem, and it's also a big asset. You know, we are very fortunate to have so many wonderful waterways and tributaries and creeks, and all of our wetlands are part of the system. If you look at an aerial of the city of Jacksonville, include our wetlands, we're really a lot of islands, and that's something we should celebrate, that we have to protect those wetlands and our waterways to make sure that they are an asset and not a vulnerability.
With all of that said, the invitation is open to anyone who wants to come out Thursday to Aardwolf. Tell us a little bit more about what time and everything people can expect.
Absolutely. So we will be convening about 5:30 with the conversation starting at 6 p.m. Logan Cross, who is the chair of the Sierra Club of Northeast Florida, is our guest this week. And he'll be presenting about Renew Jacks and their effort to get the city of Jacksonville. We're a partner of that effort. So we're asking folks to come, find out more, and to take action. And then we'll have a casual conversation with Q&A. And this will be the first of a monthly series. And so we look forward to getting out throughout the community and the watershed to look for solutions one pint at a time.
How nice. So come on out to Aardwolf Brewery in San Marco Thursday, 5:30 p.m. You'll get to meet Lisa, who's a lovely person.
Well,
and
thank you.
You'll love to meet her, St. John's River Keeper Lisa Reinemann, and hear about the Renew Jacks campaign, renewjacks.org, for more on that. Always great to see you. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to our whole team here, David Luckin, Heather Schatz, Catherine Hobbs, Isabella Da Silva, Jessica Palumbo, Randy Roguski, and the entire WJCT News team. I'm Melissa Ross. You can always drop me a line anytime, all of us here, at First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. We love hearing from you. Make it a great day. Thanks for the company. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.